faded as she fell into a troubled sleep. 36. Now tell me what's in that bucket, and be quick about it. We want no fooling, Dennis, do you understand me? Was the first thing Brandon said when he entered Dennis's room and closed the door behind him. I'll show you, Dad, Dennis said. But first, answer me one question. What sort of poison was it that killed the king? No one knows. What were its ways? Show me what's in the bucket, boy. Do it now. Brandon balled a great hard fist. He did not shake it. He only held it up. That was enough. Show me now or be knocked aside. Brandon looked at the dead mouse for a long time, saying nothing. Dennis watched, scared, as his dad's face grew paler, graver, grayer. The mouse's eyes had burnt until they were nothing but charred black cinders. Its brown fur had been crisp black. Smoke still rose from its tiny ears, and its teeth, visible in its death grimace, were a sooty black, like the teeth in the grate of a stove. Brandon made as if to touch it, and then pulled his hand back. He raised his face to his son and spoke in a hoarse whisper. Where did you find this? Dennis began to stammer out bundles of phrases which didn't mean a thing. Brandon listened a moment and then squeezed his son's shoulder. Draw you a deep breath and put your thoughts all in a row, Denny, he said. I'm on your side in this, as I am in all else, you know. You did right to keep the sight of this poor thing from your mom. Now tell me how you found it and where you found it. Eased and reassured, Dennis was able to tell his father the story. His telling was a bit shorter than mine, but it still took several minutes. His father sat in a chair, one knuckle digging into his forehead, shading his eyes. He asked no questions, did not even grunt. When Dennis had finished, his father muttered four words in an undertone. Just four words. But they froze the boy's heart into a cold blue cake. Or so it felt to him at the time. Just like the king. Brandon's lips were trembling with fright, but he seemed to be trying to smile. Do you suppose yonder animal was a king of mice, Denny? Dad? Daddy, I... There was a box, you said.
Yes.
And a packet?
Yes.
And the packet was charred but not burned.
Yes.
And tweezers?
Yes, like Mama uses to pluck the hairs from out in her nose.
Shh, Brandon said, and dug his knuckle into his forehead again. Let me think. 5 minutes went by. Brandon sat motionless, almost as if he had gone to sleep, but Dennis knew better. Brandon did not know that Peter's mother had given him the engraved box, or that Peter had lost it when he was small. Both of those things had happened long before Peter entered his half-manhood and Brandon came into his service. He did know about the secret panel. He had happened on this in the very first year he had served Peter, and not very far into that year either. As I may have said, it wasn't really a very secret compartment, as those things went, just enough to satisfy such an open boy as Peter. Brandon knew about it, but had never looked into it after that first time, when it had contained nothing more than the glorified junk that any boy calls his treasures. A tarot deck with a few cards missing, a bag of marbles, a lucky coin, a braided bit of hair from Peony's mane. If a good butler understands anything, he understands that quality we call discretion, which is a respect for the borders of other people's lives. He had never looked in that compartment again. It would have been like stealing. At last, Dennis asked,
Should we go over, Father, so you can look in the box?
No. We must go to the Judge General with this mouse, and you must tell your story to him just as you've told it to me. Dennis sat down heavily on his bed. He felt as if he had been punched in the belly. Pena, the man who ordered jail terms and beheadings. Pena, with his white, forbidding face and his tall, waxy brow. Pena, who was, below the king himself, the greatest authority in the kingdom.
No, he whispered at last. Dad, I couldn't. I...
You must, his father said sternly. This is a terrible business. The most terrible business I've ever known of. But it must be reckoned with and set right. You'll tell him just as you've told me, and then it'll be in his hands. Dennis looked in his father's eyes and saw that Brandon meant it. If he refused to go, his father would lay hold of the scruff of his neck and drag him to Pena like a kitten, 20 years old or no. Yes, Dad, he said miserably, thinking that when Pena's cold, calculating eyes fell on him, he would simply drop dead of a heart attack. Then, with rising panic, he remembered that he had stolen an ash bucket from the prince's rooms. If he didn't die of fright the moment Pena commanded him to speak, he would probably spend the rest of his life in the castle's deepest dungeon for theft. Be easy on your mind, Denny. Easy as you can be, anyway. Pena's a hard man, but he's fair. You've done nothing to be ashamed of. Just tell him as you've told me.
All right, Dennis whispered. Are we going now?
Brandon got out of the chair and onto his knees. First, we'll pray. Get here beside me, son. Dennis did. 37. Peter was tried, found guilty of regicide, and ordered imprisoned for life in the cold two rooms at the top of the Needle. All of this was done in only 3 days. It will not take long to tell you how neatly the jaws of Flag's cruel trap closed around the boy. Pena did not order the preparations for the coronation stopped at once. In fact, he thought that Dennis must be mistaken, that there must be a reasonable explanation for all of this. Just the same, the condition of the mouse, so like the condition of the king, was impossible to ignore. And the Brandon family had a long and valued reputation for honesty and level-headedness in the kingdom. That was important, but there was something else of far greater importance. When Peter was crowned, there must not be a single stain on his reputation. Pena heard Dennis out and then summoned Peter. Dennis might really have died of fright at the sight of his master, but he was mercifully allowed to go into another room with his father. Pena gravely explained to Peter that a charge had been leveled against him, a charge that Peter himself might have played a part in the murder of Roland. Anders Pena was not a man to mince words, no matter how much those words might hurt. Peter was stunned, flabbergasted. You must remember that he was still trying to cope with the idea that his beloved father was dead, killed by a cruel poison that had burned him alive from the inside out. You must remember that he had been leading the search all night, had had no sleep, and was physically exhausted. Most of all, you must remember that although he had a man's height and breadth of shoulder, he was only 16. This stunning news, on top of all else, caused him to do a very natural thing. But it was a thing he should have avoided at all costs under Pena's cold and assessing eyes. He burst into tears. If Peter had hotly denied the charge, or if he had expressed his shock and exhaustion and grief by laughing wildly at such an absurd idea, the whole thing might have ended right there. I'm sure that possibility never entered Flagg's mind. But one of Flagg's few weaknesses was a tendency to judge others according to what was in his own black and murky heart. Flagg regarded everyone with suspicion and believed everyone had hidden reasons for the things they did. His mind was very complex, like a hall of mirrors with everything reflected twice at different sizes. The track of Pena's thoughts was not convoluted, but very straightforward. He found it very difficult, almost impossible, to believe that Peter could have poisoned his father. If he had raged or laughed out loud, things probably would have ended without even a trip to investigate the supposed box with his name carved on it, or the packet and tweezers it supposedly held. Tears, however, looked very bad. Tears looked like an expression of guilt coming from a boy old enough to commit murder, but not old enough to hide what he had done. Pena decided he must investigate further. He hated to do this, because it meant taking guards, and that meant some word, some whisper of these momentary suspicions would leak out,
to taint the first weeks of Peter's reign. Then he reflected that perhaps even this could be avoided. He would take half a dozen home guards, no more. He could leave four stationed outside the door. After this ridiculous business had blown over, all of them could be shipped off to the remotest part of the kingdom. Brandon and his son would also have to be sent away, Pena thought, and that was a pity. But tongues had a way of wagging, especially when liquor loosened them, and the old man's liking for bundle gin was well known. So Pena ordered work on the coronation platform temporarily suspended. He felt confident that work could begin again in less than half an hour, with the laborers sweating and cursing and hurrying to make up for lost time. Alas. 38. The box, the packet, and the tweezers were there, as you know. Peter had sworn on his mother's name he had no such engraved box. His heated denial now looked very foolish. Pena picked up the charred packet carefully with the tweezers, peered in, and saw three flecks of green sand. They were so small they could barely be seen, but Pena, mindful of what had befallen both Great King and Humble Mouse, put the packet back in the box and closed the lid. He ordered two of the four home guards, still in the hall, to step in, realizing reluctantly that the matter was steadily growing more serious. The box was put carefully on Peter's desk, little wisps of smoke escaping from it. One of the guards was sent after the man who knew more about poisons than anyone else in the kingdom. That man, of course, was Flagg. 39. "I had nothing to do with this, Anders," Peter said. He had recovered himself, but his face was still pale and wretched, his eyes a deeper blue than the old Judge General had ever seen them. "The box is yours, then?" "Yes." "Why did you deny that you had such a box?" "I forgot. I haven't seen this box in probably 11 years or more. My mother gave it to me." "What happened to it?" "He's not calling me my lord or your highness anymore," Peter thought with a chill. "He's not calling me by any term of respect at all. Can all of this really be happening, I wonder? Father poisoned, Thomas terribly ill, Pena standing here and doing everything but accusing me of murder. And my box. Where in the name of the gods did it come from, and who put it in the secret compartment behind the books?" "I lost it," Peter said slowly. "Anders, you don't really believe I murdered my father, do you?"
"I did not, but now I wonder," Anders Pena thought.
"I loved him dearly," Peter said.
"I always thought so, but now I wonder about that too," Anders Pena thought.
40. Flagg bustled in, and without even looking in Pena's direction, began immediately to bombard the numbed, frightened, outraged prince with questions about the search. Had any trace been found of the poison or the poisoner? Any sign of a plot uncovered? He himself was of the opinion that it might have been a single individual, almost surely insane. He had spent the whole morning before his crystal, Flagg said, but the crystal remained stubbornly dark. He didn't care, though. He could do more than shake bones and peer into crystals. He craved action, not spells. Anything the prince wanted him to do, any dark corner he wanted explored. "We did not call you here to listen to you babble like your own parrot, with both heads talking at once," Pena said coldly. He did not like Flagg. As far as Pena was concerned, the magician had been demoted to the position of court nobody at the moment of Roland's death. He might be able to tell them what those evil green flecks in the packet were, but that was the extent of his usefulness. "Peter'll have no truck with this weasel when he's crowned," Pena thought. He got just that far, and then his thoughts derailed in dismay, because the chances of Peter's being crowned seemed to be growing slimmer. "No," Flagg said, "I don't suppose you did." He looked at Peter and said, "Why am I summoned, my king?"
"Don't call him that,"
Pena exploded, deeply shocked in spite of himself. Flagg saw this shock on Pena's face, and although he affected to look puzzled, he understood perfectly what it meant, and was satisfied. A worm of suspicion was working its way toward the center of the Judge General's chilly heart. Good. Peter turned his pale face away from both of them and looked out across the city, once more struggling for control of his emotions. His fingers were laced tightly together. His knuckles were white. He looked much older than 16 just then.
"Do you see the box on the desk?"
Pena asked.
"Yes, Judge General," Flagg said in his stiffest, most formal voice. "Inside is a packet which appears to be slowly charring. Inside the packet are what look like grains of sand. I would like you to examine them and see if you can tell me what they are. I urge you very strongly not to touch them. I believe that the substance in the packet may have caused King Roland's death."
Flagg allowed himself to look worried. To tell the truth, he was feeling very fine. Playing a part always made him feel that way. He liked to act. He picked up the packet using the tweezers. He peered into it. His gaze sharpened.
"I want a piece of obsidian," he said. "I want it right now."
"I have a piece in my desk," Peter said dully, and brought it out. It was not as big as the one Flagg had used and then disposed of, but it was thick. He handed it to one of the home guards, who handed it to Flagg. The magician held it toward the light, frowning a little. But inside his heart, a little man was jumping excitedly up and down, turning cartwheels and doing somersaults. The obsidian was much like his own, but one side was broken and jagged. Ah, the gods were smiling on him. Indeed, indeed, indeed they were.
"I dropped it a year or two ago," Peter said, seeing Flagg's interest.
He was unaware, as was Pena, at least for the moment, that he had added another layer of bricks to the wall that was a building around him. "The half you're holding landed on my rug, which cushioned its fall. The other half landed on the stones and shattered into 50 pieces. Obsidian is hard, but very brittle."
"Indeed, my lord," Flagg said gravely. "I've never seen such stone, although I've, of course, heard of it."
He put the obsidian on Peter's desk, upended the packet over it, and poured the 3 grains of sand onto it. In a moment, little tendrils of smoke began to rise from the obsidian. All present could see that each grain was slowly sinking into the pockmark it had created in the world's hardest known stone. The guards murmured uneasily at the sight.
"Be silent!" Pena roared, whirling on them.
The guards drew back, faces long and white with terror. This seemed more and more like witchcraft to them.
"I believe I know what these grains are, and how to test my idea," Flagg said, rapping the words out.
"But if I'm right, the test must be performed as quickly as possible."
"Why?" Pena demanded. "I believe these are grains of dragon sand," Flagg said. "I had a very small quantity once, but it disappeared, alas, before I could study it closely. It may well have been stolen."
Flagg did not miss the way Pena's eyes flipped toward Peter at this.
"I have been uneasy about it, off and on, ever since," he went on, "because it is reputed to be one of the deadliest substances on Earth. I did not have a chance to test its properties, and so doubted. But I see much of what I was told proved here already."
Flagg pointed at the obsidian. The dimples in which the 3 specks of green sand rested were each now nearly an inch deep. Smoke rose from each like smoke from a tiny campfire. Flagg guessed that each grain had eaten through 50 the thickness of the stone.
"Those 3 specks of sand are working their way rapidly through a piece of the hardest rock we know," he said. "Dragon sand is reputed to be so corrosive that it will eat through any solid at all. And it produces fearsome heat."
"You, guard!" Flagg pointed at one of the home guards. He stepped forward, not looking happy to have been chosen.
"Touch the side of the rock," Flagg said. And as the guard reached a tentative hand forward to touch the paperweight, he added sharply, "Just the side.
Don't get your hand near those holes. The guard touched the paperweight and drew his hand back with a gasp. He stuck his fingers in his mouth, but not before Pena had seen the blisters rising there.
Obsidian conducts heat very slowly, I've heard, Flagg said. But that piece is as hot as the top of a stove. All from 3 grains of sand that would fit on the moon of your pinky fingernail, with room left over.
Touch the prince's desk, Lord Judge General. Pena did. He was distressed and amazed by the heat under his hand. Soon the heavy wood must begin to blister and char.
So we must act quickly, Flagg said. Soon the desk itself will catch fire. If we breathe the fumes, always assuming the stories I have been told are true, all of us will die within days. But, to be sure, another test.
At this, the home guards looked more uneasy than ever.
All right, Pena said. What is this test? Be quick, man.
He detested Flagg more than ever now, and if he had ever felt it would not do to underestimate him, he felt that doubly now. 5 minutes before, Pena had been ready to dismiss the man as the court nobody. Now it seemed that their lives, and Pena's case against Peter, depended on him.
I propose to fill a bucket with water, Flagg said, speaking more rapidly than ever. His dark eyes gleamed.
The home guards and Pena stared at those small black holes in the obsidian, at those tiny ribbons of steam, with the evil fascination of birds hypnotized by a nest of weaving pythons.
How deep into the obsidian now? How close to the wood?
Impossible to tell. Even Peter was looking, although the tired mixture of sorrow and confusion had not left his face.
Water from the prince's pump, Flagg shouted at one of the guards. We want it in a bucket, or a deep pot or pan. Now, now!
The guard looked at Pena.
Do it, Pena said, trying not to sound frightened.
But he was frightened, and Flagg knew it.
The guard went. In moments they heard water being pumped into a bucket he had found in the butler's cupboard.
Flagg was speaking again.
I propose to dip my finger into this bucket and let a drop of water fall into one of those holes, he said.
We'll watch this closely, Lord Judge General. We must see if the water which goes into the hole turns momentarily green. It's a sure sign.
And then? Pena asked tautly.
The home guard returned. Flagg took the bucket, set it on the desk.
Then I'll put drops very carefully into the other two holes, Flagg said.
He spoke calmly, but his normally pallid cheeks were flushed.
Water won't stop dragon sand, it's told, but it'll hold it.
This was making things quite a bit worse than they were, but Flagg wanted them frightened.
Why not just douse it? One of the guards blurted.
Pena favored this upstart with a horrible glare, but Flagg answered the question calmly as he dipped his pinky finger into the bucket.
Would you like me to wash those 3 grains of sand out of the holes they've made in the rock and somewhere onto the lad's desk?
He asked almost jovially.
We could leave you in here to put out the fire when the water dried up, sirrah.
The guard said no more. Flagg drew his dripping finger out of the bucket.
Water's warm already, he said to Pena, just from sitting on the desk.
He carefully brought his finger, from which a single drop of water hung, over one of the holes.
Watch closely, Flagg said sharply.
And to Peter he sounded at that moment like a cheap peddler about to perform some monstrously deceiving trick. But Pena bent close. The home guards craned their necks. That single drop of water hung from Flagg's finger, for a moment catching all of Peter's room behind it in perfect curved miniature. It hung, elongated, and dropped into the hole. There was a spatting hiss, like the sound of grease dropping onto a hot iron skillet. A tiny geyser of steam arose from the hole, but before it did, Pena clearly saw a cat's eye flash of green. In that moment, Peter's fate was sealed.
Dragon sand, by the gods, Flagg whispered hoarsely. Don't for pity's sake breathe that steam.
Anders Pena's courage was as hard as his reputation, but he was afraid now. To him, that single wink of green light had seemed inexpressibly evil.
"Put out the other two," he said hoarsely.
"No."
"I told you," Flagg said, calmly dipping his pinky again and staring at the obsidian. "They can't be put out."
"Well, there is one way, the tales say, but only one. You wouldn't like it.
Yet we can hold them and get rid of them, I think."
He carefully plinked a drop into each of the other two holes. Each time there was a sullen green flash of light and a plume of steam.
"We're all right for a bit, I think," Flagg said.
One of the home guards sighed in gusty relief.
"Bring me gloves, or folded cloths. Anything I can use to pick up this rock. It's as hot as fury, and those drops of water will be boiled away in no time."
Two hot pads from the butler's closet were brought quickly. Flagg used them to grasp the obsidian. He lifted it, careful to keep it level, then dropped it into the bucket. As the obsidian sank to the bottom, all of them clearly saw the water turn a momentary light green.
"Now," Flagg said expansively, "that is well. One of these guards must take this bucket out of the castle and to the large pump by the great old tree in the middle of the keep. There you must draw a large basin of water and put the bucket in the basin. The basin must be taken to the middle of Lake Joanna and sunk in the middle. The dragon sand may heat up the lake in 100,000 years, but let those that come in that time, if any do, worry about that, I say."
Pena paused for just a moment, biting his lip in uncharacteristic indecision, and then he said,
"You and you and you, do as he says."
The bucket was removed. The home guards carried it like men carrying a live bomb. Flagg was amused, for all of this was, in large part, magician's foolery, as Peter himself had momentarily suspected. The single drops of water he had allowed to fall into the holes had not been enough to stop the corrosive effect of the sand, at least not for long. But he knew that the water in the bucket would damp it well. Even less liquid would have served for more of the sand. A goblet of wine, say. But let them believe what they would. In time, they would turn against Peter with that much more fury. When the guards had gone, Pena turned to Flagg. "You said there was one way the effect of dragon sand could be neutralized."
"Yes. The stories say that if it is taken into a living being, that living being will burn in agony until it is dead. And when it is over, the dying, the power of the dragon sand, also dies. I had meant to test it, but before I could do it, my sample disappeared."
Pena was staring at him, white around the lips.
"And on what sort of living being did you intend to test this damned stuff, magician?"
Flagg looked at Pena with bland innocence.
"Why, on a mouse, my Lord Judge General, of course."
41. At 3 that afternoon, a strange meeting took place in the royal court of Delane at the base of the Needle, a great room which, over the years, had become known simply as Pena's Court.
Meeting. I don't like that word. It's too tame and small to describe the momentous decision that was arrived at that afternoon. I cannot call it a hearing or a trial, because that gathering had no legal meaning at all. But it was very important, as I think you will agree.
The room was large enough to hold 500, but there were only 7 there that afternoon. 6 of them huddled close together, as if it made them nervous to be so few in a place meant for so many. The royal arms of the kingdom, a unicorn spearing a dragon, hung on one of the circular stone walls, and Peter found his gaze returning to this again and again. Besides himself, Pena was there, and Flagg. It was Flagg, of course, who sat slightly apart from the others. And 4 of the kingdom's great lawyers. There were 10 great lawyers in all, but the other 6 were at various far-flung places in Delane hearing cases. Pena had decided he couldn't wait for them. He knew he had to move fast and decisively, or the kingdom might bleed. He knew it, But it galled him to know he would need the help of this cool young murderer to avert such bloodshed. That Peter was a murderer was something Anders Pena had now decided in his own heart. It wasn't the box, the green sand, or even the burning mouth that had decided him. It was Peter's tears. Peter, to do him credit, looked neither guilty nor weak now. He was pale but calm, completely in charge of himself again. Pena cleared his throat. The sound echoed dully back from the forbidding stone walls of the court chamber. He pressed a hand to his forehead and was not entirely surprised to find a sheen of cold sweat there. He had heard testimony in hundreds of great and solemn cases. He had sent more men than he cared to remember beneath the headsman's axe. But never had he thought he would have to attend a meeting such as this, or the trial of a prince for the murder of his royal father. And such a trial would surely follow if all went as he hoped this afternoon. It was right, he thought, that he be sweating, and right that the sweat should be cold. Just a meeting. Nothing legal here, nothing official, nothing of the kingdom. But none of them, not Pena, not Flagg, not the great lawyers, not Peter himself, were fooled. This was the real trial, this meeting. The power was here. That burning mouse had set a great course of events in motion. That course would either be turned here, as a great river may be turned, near its source when it is still a brook, or it would be allowed to run onward, gathering power as it went, until no force on earth could turn it or stand before it. Just a meeting, Anders Pena thought, and wiped more sweat from his forehead. 42. Flagg watched the proceedings with a lively eye. Like Pena, he knew that all would be decided here, and he felt confident. Peter's head was up, his gaze firm. He met the eyes of each member of this informal jury in turn. The stone walls frowned down on all seven. The spectators' benches were empty. But Pena seemed to feel the weight of phantom eyes, eyes that demanded justice be rendered in this terrible matter. "My lord," Pena said at last, "the sun made you king 3 hours ago." Peter looked at Pena, surprised but silent. "Yes," Pena said, as if Peter had spoken. The great lawyers were nodding, and they looked dreadfully solemn. "There has been no coronation, but a coronation is only a public event. It is, for all its solemnity, show and not substance. God, the law, and the sun make a king, not the coronation. You are king at this very minute, legally able to command me, all of us here, the entire kingdom. This puts us in a terrible dilemma. Do you understand what it is?" "Yes," Peter said gravely. "You think your king is a murderer?" Pena was a little surprised by this bluntness, but not entirely unhappy with it. Peter had always been a blunt boy. It was a pity that his surface bluntness had concealed such depths of calculation, but the important thing was that such bluntness, probably the result of a boy's stupid bravado, would speed things up. "What we believe, my lord, doesn't matter. Guilt or innocence is for a court to determine. So I've always been taught, so I believe with my most sincere heart. There is only one exception to this. Kings are above the law. Do you understand?" "Yes." "But," Pena raised his finger, "but this crime was committed before you were king. So far as I know, this terrible situation has never come before a court of Delane before. The possibilities are terrible. Anarchy, chaos, civil war. To avert all of these things, my lord, we must have your help." Peter looked at him gravely. "I will help if I can," he said. "And I think, I pray, you will agree to what I am about to propose," Pena thought. He was conscious of fresh sweat on his forehead, but he didn't wipe it off this time. Peter was only a boy, but he was a bright boy. He might take it as a sign of weakness. "You'll say you're agreeing for the good of the kingdom, But a boy who could have the monstrous, twisted courage to kill his own father is also, I hope, a boy who cannot help believing he will get away with it. You believe we will help you cover this up, but, oh, my Lord, you are so wrong. Flagg, who could almost read these thoughts, raised his hand to his mouth to cover a smile. Pena hated him, but Pena had become his number one helper without even knowing it. I want you to put aside the crown, Pena said. Peter looked at him with grave surprise. Renounce the throne? He asked. I don't know, my Lord Judge General. I should have to think about that before I said yes or no. That might be hurting the kingdom by trying to help it. As a doctor may kill a sick man by giving him too much medicine. The lad's clever, Flagg and Pena thought together. You misunderstand me. It's not a renunciation of the throne I ask for. Only that you put the crown aside until this matter has been decided. If you are found innocent of your father's murder, as I will be, Peter said. If my father had ruled until I was old and toothless, it would have made me perfectly happy. I wanted only to serve him and support him and love him in all I did. Yet your father is dead, and you stand accused by circumstance. Peter nodded. If you are found innocent, you would resume the crown. If you are found guilty... The great lawyers looked nervous at this, but Pena did not flinch. If you are found guilty, you would be taken to the top of the needle, where you would spend the rest of your life. None of the royal family may be executed. That law is 1,000 years old. And Thomas would become king? Peter asked thoughtfully. Flagg stiffened slightly. Yes. Peter frowned, deep in thought. He looked terribly tired, but not confused or afraid, and Flagg felt a faint stirring of fear. Suppose I refuse? If you refuse, then you become king in spite of terrible charges, which have not been answered. Many of your subjects, most in light of the evidence, will believe they have come to be ruled by a young man who murdered his own father to gain the throne. I think there will be revolt and civil war, and that those things will come before much time has passed. As for myself, I would resign my post and set out toward the west. I am old to begin over, but I should have to try to do so just the same. My life has been the law, and I could not serve a king who has not knelt to the law in such a matter as this. There was silence in the chamber, a silence that seemed very long. Peter sat with his head bowed, the heels of his hands planted against his eyes. They all watched and waited. Now even Flagg felt a thin film of sweat on his brow. Finally, Peter raised his head and took his hand from his eyes. Very well, he said. Here is my command as king. I will put the crown aside until I am cleared of my father's murder. You, Pena, will serve Delane as chancellor during the time it is without a royal head. I would that the trial should take place as soon as may be, tomorrow even, if that is possible. I will be bound by the decision of the court. But you will not try me. They all blinked and sat up straighter at this dry note of authority, but Joseph of the stables would not have been surprised by it. He had heard that tone in the boy's voice before, when Peter was only a stripling. One of these other four will do that, Peter continued. I'll not be tried by the man who will hold power in my place. A man who, by his look and manner, already feels in his heart that I have committed this terrible crime. Pena felt himself flush. One of these four, Peter reiterated, turning to the great lawyers. Let 4 stones, 3 black and 1 white, be put in a cup. The one who draws the white stone shall preside at my trial. Do you agree? My lord, I do, Pena agreed slowly, hating the flush which even now wouldn't leave his cheeks. Again, Flagg had to raise a hand to his mouth to cover a small smile. And that, my little doomed lord,
is the only command you will ever give as king of Delane, he thought. 43. The meeting, which began at 3 o'clock, was over by 1:15. Senates and parliaments may drone on for days and months before deciding a single issue, and often the issue is never decided at all, in spite of all the talk. But when great things happen, they usually happen fast. And 3 hours later, as dark was coming down, something happened which made Peter realize that, mad as it seemed, he was going to be found guilty of this terrible crime. He was escorted back to his apartments by unsmiling, silent guards. His meals, Pena said, would be brought to him. Supper was fetched by a burly home guardsman with a heavy stubble of beard on his face. He was holding a tray. On it were a glass of milk and a large steaming bowl of stew. Peter stood up as the guardsman came in. He reached for the tray. "Not yet, my lord," the guardsman said, the sneer in his voice apparent. "It needs seasoning, I think." And with that he spat into the stew. Then, grinning, showing a mouthful of teeth and gaps like an ill-tended picket fence, he held the tray out. "Here." Peter made no motion to take it. He was utterly astonished. "Why did you do that? Why did you spit in my stew? Does a child who murders his father deserve any better, my lord?" "No, but one who has not even been tried for the crime does," Peter said. "Take that out and bring me a fresh tray. Bring it in 15 minutes, or you'll sleep tonight below flag in the dungeons." The guardsman's ugly sneer faltered for a moment, and then returned. "I think not," he said. He tilted the tray, first just a little, then more, then more. The glass and bowl shattered on the flagstones. Thick stew splattered in ropes. "Lick it up," the guardsman said. "Lick it up like the dog you are." He turned to go. Peter, suddenly blazing, leaped forward and slapped the man. The sound of the blow rang in the room like a pistol shot. With a bellow, the scruffy guardsman pulled out his short sword. Smiling humorlessly, Peter lifted his chin and bared his neck. "Go ahead," he said. "A man who would spit in another man's soup is perhaps also the sort of man who would cut an unarmed man's throat. Go ahead. Pigs also do God's bidding, I believe, and my shame and my grief are very great. If God wills me to live, I must. But if God wills me to die, and has sent such a pig as you to do the killing, that is very well." The home guardsman's anger melted into confusion. After a moment, he sheathed his sword. "I'll not dirty my blade," he said. But his words were almost a mumble, and he was not able to meet Peter's eye. "Bring me fresh food and drink," Peter said quietly. "I don't know who you have been talking to, guardsman, and I don't care. I don't know why you are so eager to condemn me for my father's murder when no testimony has yet been heard, and I don't care about that either. But you will bring me fresh meat and drink, and a napkin to go with them. And you will do this before the clock strikes 6:30, or I will ring for Pena, and you will sleep below flag tonight. My guilt is not proved. Pena is yet mine to command, and I swear what I say is true." During this, the home guardsman grew paler and paler, because he saw Peter did speak the truth. But this was not the only reason for his pallor. When his mates had told him the prince had been caught red-handed, he had believed them. He had wanted to believe them. But now he wondered. Peter did not look or speak like a guilty man. "Yes, my lord," he said.